to you from a galaxy far, far away. Welcome one and all once again to... As always, we don't actually have a name for these things until you do like the second or third episode.
Yeah, by the end of the episode, we will have a name for this series.
You would think we discussed this beforehand, but nope. much like we did with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I've done before with this Spider-Man franchise and the Superman franchise, we are taking a special look at the Star Wars franchise in anticipation of The Force Awakens, which opens on December 18th, 2015, which is roughly a month from now as of this recording. As I was with the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, I am joined by Scott.
Hello, everybody.
And Tony.
Red Leader standing by.
So, we are going through the Star Wars universe, and I want to open this up to Scott, because he's the one who suggested this. But we are not going through any of the traditional orders, as far as I know. We're not going 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, nor are we going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Instead, we are going 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6. And do you want to explain the rationale behind that, Scott?
Okay, the rationale behind this is you watch episode 4 because it's the first movie, the first Star Wars movie that came out. And then obviously you would go to episode 5 because it's the second one. And then this is a bit of a spoiler, so if you haven't seen Star Wars, I really don't know why you're listening to this podcast. But I'm just going to throw that out there, it's a spoiler. But at the end of Empire Strikes Back, Darth Vader reveals that he is indeed Luke Skywalker's father. And exactly. And so what this viewing order does is after episode 5, you would go into the prequels. Now, generally, like when I watch, if I'm doing a marathon, I won't even watch episode 1. I'll just go right to episode 2 and 3.
Right.
But the whole point of that is it sort of views it as like a flashback to this is all the fun times me and Obi-Wan had together before I became evil and killed a bunch of people. And then so you would watch 4, 5 and then 1, 2, 3 or just 2 and 3, and then you would finish it off by watching Return of the Jedi and bringing everything to a neat little close with an awesome flashback in between.
Right. Yeah, it's actually the order is, I think, called the Machete Order or something like that. I found it online a while ago when I was looking for different ways to watch the series. And as you said, they cut out the first episode because episode 1 is a garbage baby movie. And
that was one of the because I asked which order we should do it in, and that was the one feedback that was consistent among most people is don't do episode 1 whatever you do because it's not really needed.
It doesn't fit. I mean, like in the overall feel of the movies, it doesn't fit. It's a children's movie made to sell toys. I mean, which, granted, a lot of the Star Wars movies are, they are very successful in selling toys and other, you know, memorabilia. But that movie especially was just, it was not good.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm curious. So why not do 4, 1, 2, 5, 3, then 6?
That would spoil that Vader is Luke's father, you know. So that's why you wait till after episode 5 when you find the reveal, and then and watch it.
I was gonna say because he doesn't turn into Darth Vader until 3, so you still wouldn't know.
Yeah,
he's
Anakin Skywalker. Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
I was asking because if you do 1 and 2 after 4, then you get the backstory of Obi-Wan and Anakin's relationship, which is part of A New Hope. Then you go into 5, you get the plot twist, and then you'll get how Vader became.
Right. So you're thinking 4, 1, 2, 5, 3, 6.
Yes.
4, 1, 2, 5, 3, 6. That would make sense.
I can see how that would work. That's definitely an interesting viewing order that I hadn't considered.
Yeah, I kind of like that because in 4, you know. As far as what you know about Luke and his father is when Obi-Wan tells Luke, you know, your father was a Jedi and he was killed by Darth Vader. And then you go and you watch, you know, Obi-Wan and Anakin's relationship grow. But as you said, he doesn't turn into Vader until 6. So
3.
Then you go back and watch 5. You get the reveal that Vader is actually Anakin. And then you watch how he turned into him, and then you go back and finish the series. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I like that.
There's only one stipulation, and I just remembered the line in A New Hope, and that's when Luke Skywalker, after he's rescued from the Tusken Raiders by Obi-Wan, he asks how his father died, and Obi-Wan says, "A young Jedi named Darth Vader, who was a pupil of mine." So, it's the only possible problem, but...
Well, I mean, somewhat, because you still... Because, I mean, even at the end of 2, like, the Clone Wars begins, but there's still other Jedis. There's still a gap between 2 and 3 as well.
For sure. Yeah. And you don't know that maybe Darth Vader could have been his pupil later on, and, you know, so, I mean, I think it works.
Yeah. It still leaves it enough open, but also sort of hints at what's to come, you know?
I will say this much, and I guess we can get into the show that way. This is the first time I'm actually doing like an entire series watch at once. I've seen one once, I've seen two once, I've seen three twice, and then the other ones I've seen a few times. I usually do 4, 5, and I think we all have done 4, 5, and 6 in order, because I don't think any of us were around when those movies came out.
No. I mean, 4 came out in 77, so yeah, that's like my parents were kids at that time. So
yeah.
And when did Empire Strike Back comes out? That was 19. Okay, when did Return of the Jedi come out?
Was it
83. So not like the original three. Like, by the time those came out. I wasn't even born. None of us would have been born by the time they finished the original trilogy. So,
right.
I mean, you could watch maybe one at a time, but they were all out. They were, I'm not going to say they were all accessible. I remember when it was a big deal when they first hit VHS.
Yeah. I don't know when they first, that would have probably been before my time too, when they hit VHS, to be honest.
It might have been before that. But I remember there was a big hoo-ha about it when The Phantom Menace came out, because that was around the first time. And I could be wrong again. I do know, because, you know, there's always, and I guess we'll get into it, especially with this one, there's always the various versions and the recuts that people don't like for one reason or another.
Like Greedo shooting first?
Yes, that's the big one that we'll get into.
I've got the latest, like, Blu-ray box set of all 6 movies. And yeah, there are definitely a few scenes, even in the first movie, that they just randomly added in CG characters for no reason in the background, and you're like, why is that there?
They did that a lot. But just to wrap up the Greedo shooting first thing, as the big problem, that's like when someone asks what's the big deal with the remastering, people would be like, well, Greedo's not supposed to shoot first. Well, I watched the latest version of episode 4, and to me it looked like they both shot at the same time now. So I don't know what's going on anymore in my life.
That's what I have, is the latest version, and it shows them shooting at the same time. But if in the original, the original is on VHS, and it's really hard to find a copy of it to see what happened. But I'm trying to remember. I don't know if I've ever even seen that version where Han shot first. I don't know. I mean, I might have, but it would have been so long ago. You know,
I was after that time. By the time I was born, Greedo shot first.
Yeah, but I definitely like the idea that Han would shoot first, because he's not a good guy at all. Like, he's a scumbag.
Yeah,
but, I mean, I guess in this he'd be an anti-hero, is the closest term you'll get. But I guess that was to soften him up a bit.
I think he becomes that. I think at the very beginning of the series.
Oh, no, at the very beginning.
He's just a bad guy.
I think when he comes back at the end to rescue Luke and stuff.
Exactly.
That's kind of when he becomes foil and anti-hero. Because his motivations are pretty much monetary throughout the course of this film.
Yeah.
And it only changes at the very, like, the second last scene in the film.
For sure. I mean, you look at when they go in to save Princess Leia. And Han's like, yeah, forget this. I'm going to get out of here. And then in order to get him to actually help, Luke is like, well, she's rich, so, you know, I can hook you up with some cash. And he's like, well, all right, I'll think about it. So his intentions are the opposite of pure, for sure, until the very end of the film, where he kind of turns around.
Okay. So, I mean, as we do, I guess the first order of business is, when did you first experience Star Wars? How did you get into the movies?
That is a great question.
Yeah, I can't really pinpoint an exact time into, like, when I first watched Star Wars, because as far as I can remember, I was just born and raised watching it.
For sure, so, yeah. I can't remember a time when I didn't know Star Wars, you know what I mean? It's like, I've just always, like, I must have been a baby when I watched it.
It's like, I can tell you almost to the exact time and day that I watched, like, Iron Man and the movies, and each movie in the Marvel the cinematic universe. It's so different with Star Wars, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even remember exactly when I saw Episode 1, and I was, like, 10 by that point.
I remember when I saw Episode 1, because I went and saw it at midnight at the theater, and, like, people were all dressed up and crap. But as far as, like, the original trilogy, I was just born knowing it. I must have watched it in the womb or something. But what's cool is, like, every now and then I'll look at videos online where people, like, will show the movies to their kids, and they'll have, like, the reveal where Darth Vader, you know, says that he's Luke's father. And kids are like, what? They, like, freak out because they have no idea. And I'm like, man, I wish I had that, because I always knew that Darth Vader was Luke's father. Like, there was no point in my life that I didn't know, that I can recall. But
So I guess I'm the only one who actually has a story, I guess. I guess this would have been either sophomore or junior year of college. Yeah, and that's part of the story. One of my high school friends went to a college near me, and I went to visit him, and his roommate was a big Star Wars fan. And I had let it known that I've never seen a Star Wars film. And he had just happened to have gotten the DVD box set recently, I guess maybe around Christmas time. So one weekend he sat me down and forced me to watch all three of them throughout that weekend. And that was the first time I seen it. And to your point, I had known about the twist, the Darth Vader youth, because it's a scene that's been parodied to death in entertainment. I'm sure you've seen something, a movie, a TV show, a comic, or something that has had some type of "I am your father" scene in it.
Sure, yep. It's common knowledge at this point. It's like, you know, it's just something that people know. But yeah, so I guess it wasn't really much of a surprise to you when you saw the movies for the first time.
Like, it was a surprise in the essence. I didn't know the setup for it. I knew the franchise, but I didn't know the context or. And I could be wrong. I also feel like it was just something when you watch the next one right away, where it's like, if you think back to this, this would have been a 3-year wait for between movies for people. And like, even in the olden days, like, if you had to rent it, you have to go to, like, here you can just, like, watch it the next day and be good. But yeah, it was, I guess because I had seen similar twists by Dan and other things, it wasn't a huge ordeal. But in retrospective, and like rewatching it, it's always fun to rewatch A New Hope, to see how colorful the wording is in certain scenes around this issue. And it's like, it was really smart because, you know, like you mentioned with Obi-Wan, like, he was killed, you know, your father died a long time ago.
Right.
He was, you know, somebody corrupted by the, and it's like that fuzzy wording, what you watch an empire and then you realize, like, oh, okay. So he's dead in the sense that Anakin no longer exists, but it's the same person.
Well, even one thing that I noticed in watching A New Hope was the scene where, you know, where Luke meets Obi-Wan for the first time, and R2 is there, and he's like, oh, you know, this is your droid. And he's like, I don't remember ever owning a droid. So even there, he doesn't say, because he knows R2, because he, you know, if you watch the prequels, he had been around him, but he specifically.
That's one of the things I hate about the prequels.
What's that?
R2 in the prequels?
But like C-3PO, because he's in there too, and they wipe their memories.
Yeah.
Yeah, they wipe C-3PO's memory. They don't wipe R2's.
They don't wipe R2's. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he can't talk.
Well, yeah, and also it's R2. Come on, R2's not going to rat anybody out.
Nah, C-3PO, the guy's a weasel.
Yeah, R2's an OG. Yep. Snitches get stitches. R2 doesn't mess around.
But yes, getting into the movie, I will say one thing that doesn't surprise me. I've seen the movie before, but this movie gets right into the action.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't mess around with that. It throws you right into a firefight. Scene one.
It's interesting because, and you know, the famous opening scroll where they kind of give you the backstory, but, I've heard a bit of a commentary or a museum exhibit I've went to, but they said that they wanted it to feel like you came in like halfway through a movie or something, and that's what it feels like, because you get, like, you're in, it's not just that you go into the action, you're in the middle of a scene, like, they're invading this ambassadorship.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, yeah, and you're in the middle of, like, this war, basically, and I think that's a cool way to start off the film. It really, like, kickstarts the film, to where they're like, okay, all this is going on, and now they're raiding the ship, and here we go. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. And you're right in the mix. Like, it's not there's no weird setup. You know, it doesn't, you know, a lot of movies nowadays, especially first films in a series, spend, you know, practically half the film setting up the origin story and all that stuff. But in this movie, it's just like, this is what's going on, and here we go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I really appreciate.
It introduces the idea of the shadowy evil empire right off the bat. You see the stormtrooper armor and you're like, whoa, what is this? Those guys are definitely evil. And this, you know, weak but determined resistance. And right off the bat, you've already picked your side. And me as a kid, I picked the empire. So I don't know.
I don't think they're evil. It's weird. It's one of those weird things because the stormtroopers are white, and white is traditionally seen as the color of the hero.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Darth Vader is evil, he's all Vak, and Vak is the color of evil, which in hindsight would not work as a sentence if I wasn't Vak myself. but it is true, like, it's the light versus the dark, and that's kind of what you get.
It goes back to Westerns, really. They would have the white hats and the black hats, and the black hat was always the bad guy, and the white hat was always the good guy. That's just, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. how it was.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's kind of what you'll get here. I mean, I think he's... What do they call this? A space opera? But it's fashioned out of the old serials and westerns in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. You definitely get a feel of like an old western, almost like a space western in the series. And I do think it's cool. Like, it isn't obviously a very older film, you know, starting back in the 70s, but a lot of it still holds up. I mean, there are definitely a few scenes here and there where you're like, oh, wow, that's super old school. But, I mean, I think they were very smart with the way that they used their effects and just the way they shot the film. Like, it still holds up to this day, even, you know, what, 30, 40 years later?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say, though, that after watching A New Hope again very recently, the most digitally remastered
this show.
Yeah, oh, I figured I needed to watch it again, even though I've already seen it at least 100 times, and that's not an overestimation. Must have seen it like 100 times. But I figured I need to watch the most updated remastered version so that I could be like, well, this is, you know, what's just changed since I've started the movies. I will say that any scene that's inside the Millennium Falcon's cockpit seems a little weird after all the remakes. I don't know if you noticed that, Tony, but it felt a little odd. I don't remember feeling that way watching them like on VHS and DVD, but HD Blu-ray, it was just weird.
Hmm. I mean, like, what do you mean by weird? Do you mean like just the detail was strange, or
yeah, because everything was so detailed that you could tell like some people just like made this in a basement almost, and how close everyone was, how close the shots were in some instances. Those were basically the only scenes that there was any real problem, except the stormtrooper getting hit in the head. I noticed that one with the door closing on his head.
I don't remember that.
Okay,
I've seen a gif of that.
Yeah, there's the scene when on the Death Star, C-3PO and R2-D2 are in the room alone after Luke and Han go to rescue Leia, and stormtroopers open the door, and as they're entering, one of them hits his head on the door.
Oh,
and
yeah,
they
yeah,
just
I have
left
seen
that.
That
in. Yeah.
That's awesome. I like that one. I also like the one where Darth Vader grabs the rebel guy by the neck and, like, breaks his neck and then throws him up against the wall, and the guy puts his hands up to protect his face when he hits the wall. Yeah. It's like, but you're dead. He just snapped your neck.
Yeah. So
there's definitely a few scenes like that, but that's just, I mean, in any movie, you're going to have stuff like that.
And there's stuff that I went to. They have a, I don't know if either of you have been to, they have a traveling like, Star Wars costume exhibit going on right now.
Oh, cool.
And I haven't, it's in New York City right now. I actually didn't go to that.
Uh-oh.
But I went to it when it was in Seattle. And one of the things that they talk about is like how, like the Stormtroopers costumes are like the boots are just like, actual boots painted white, and it's not completely painted white, but they said nobody ever noticed, so
they're just wearing regular boots and they just painted them white.
It's like black boots that they painted white or something, because they had to go buy it in the store. The budget for the first one is extremely cheap.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
definitely. I think the budget, I'm looking at it right now on Wikipedia, was $11 million, which is crazy. $11 million, that's like an independent film nowadays practically.
Well, I mean, then you have to account for inflation, but yeah.
Sure. Like, I mean, and then the box office was, I mean, $775 million, which is insane. So it made it it made an obscene amount of money. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Even though it made a ton, it really was the merchandising. Like, this was a merchandising monster, is a merchandising monster, I should say.
Yeah. Well, what's cool about that, speaking of merchandising, is that George Lucas, when he made the deal with Fox, you know, to get, you know, the money, the budget for the movie, apparently he was able to keep the merchandising rights. So, I mean, he's made an absurd amount of money just off of merchandising himself, because he was still collecting that, as opposed to nowadays, if anybody that, you know, wants to make a movie nowadays, merchandising is, it's not even an option. Like, that's going to the studio.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's made an insane amount of money off for this franchise in general.
Yeah.
I mean, it helps when you sell it for $4.5 billion. So,
yeah,
yeah,
and
I
that's
think
just on top of all the money he had already made.
Yeah, his current net worth as of 2015 is $5.1 billion. So that's just insane, and the majority of his money is coming from this random space opera movie that he wrote one day. So it's like, wow.
Yeah, people can say what they want about Jar Jar Binks and all that, you know, the prequels suck and all that, but yeah, they're not George Lucas sitting on $5 billion, so who really won?
Yeah, exactly, right? But do you guys want to kind of, I guess we can talk about the plot a little bit more in this particular film, because we're kind of like, so far I've been speaking about the overall, you know,
we keep getting pulled out of the plot into... That happens when I talk about Star Wars a lot, and it may happen again in the future. I'll just get sidetracked, like, oh, well, speaking of this, blah, blah, blah.
Right. No problem. So, okay, so, you know, movie starts out, as we said, the Empire is boarding this the ship that you have Princess Leia on, who is part of the Rebellion, but she says that she's not, and she's on a diplomatic mission, and apparently, was it, so they have, okay, so I guess prior to this, you get from the scroll that they had stolen plans for the Death Star, which the Empire had built as, like, this giant galactic weapon that they're going to be using to, like, blow up planets. So someone had stolen the schematics and gotten them to Princess Leia, and that's when the Empire found her, boarded her ship, trying to get the schematics back, because, you know, they didn't want them finding any weaknesses or anything like that. But Princess Leia gives them to R2-D2, and C-3PO goes along with him and gets ejected from the ship down to the planet, which is Tatooine. Tatooine. Which is another funny scene, because, like, you know, the droids get into this escape pod and get ejected from the ship, and then you have the guys, the bad guys who are like, oh, there goes an escape pod, and the guy's like, oh, don't shoot at it. There's no life forms on board. It's like, all right, I mean, you want to just shoot it maybe just in case?
Yeah, it's like my friend was like, what, do they have like a laser shortage? Like they have to like budget their lasers? Like, yeah, you can't just shoot the empty ones.
Like, well, you know, maybe just shoot it a little bit. Like, are you sure? You want to just let it go?
The whole saga could have ended right there.
Yeah, how funny would that have been?
If Jim wasn't so lazy.
Yeah, the entire Star Wars thing is just like, oh, hey, there goes an escape pod. All right, let's blow that up real quick just to make sure.
And then the
Empire. I'm sure we've all had jobs where, like, you know, if you don't have to do it, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
But who would have thought that ignoring that one escape pod would literally spell doom for the entire Empire? Who would have thought?
True. Which brings me to my theory.
And having a gigantic weakness.
Right.
Like, I understand having a weakness, but like this one weakness that's like, oh yeah, it can fill up the entire ship if you happen to find it.
That is
like
true.
Whenever something has like an auto-destruct button, like why do you have an auto-destruct button out in the open?
Yeah, big red button that says self-destruct. You're like, what? Why do you have that? Anybody could press that. But yeah, that's pretty funny. So the droids get down to Tatooine. And they get picked up by Luke's uncle.
But they get picked up by other people first.
The Jawas.
The Jawas capture them and then go to sell them, which they do.
Yeah, Luke's uncle Owen.
Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
Yeah, Beru.
And let's see what happens from then. So they take him back to their place where they have like a moisture farm, which is kind of silly, but whatever. And that's where you're introduced really to Luke, who at this point is just a kid living on a farm in the middle of nowhere, like just a really crappy situation. Like, man, why would anyone want to live there? Like, for sure there's an entire galaxy. You can go anywhere.
What is his age supposed to be in this movie?
Oh, that's a really good question.
It's about 20.
I would assume probably 1920, something like that, because you have to think that he wants to go off to.
That's what I was wondering. He doesn't look the part.
Yeah, he doesn't.
He looks pretty young. Like, I wonder how old. Like,
yeah, he looks young, but he looks more mid-20s than anything.
Yeah. Well, he was born in 51, so he would have been like 27, 28 at the time.
Okay, so he looks his age then.
He looks remarkably his age.
Yeah, right.
And to skip ahead, there's a message from that R2-D2 has jammed in him that says he's Princess. Okay, this is something that I find kind of funny. It's like nobody knows how to pronounce Princess's name in this movie.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
There's like Leah, Princess Leah.
Three different pronunciations.
It's like. Whatever, you know what? We'll figure it out the next movie.
And right? They do, I think.
They do.
I don't remember.
But it's just kind of funny. Yeah. It took him for... And I thought this was a terrible pun, but it took him for Obi-Wan, and Luke's like, do you think he means Old Ben Kenobi?
Oh, God, I know. That is one of those, like, cringe moments where you're like, what? Really? The guy couldn't think of a more discreet name to, like, go by?
Yeah, it's like, why even hide only one part of your name? Like, the Kenobi part's pretty... It's not... Unless it's, like, Smith out there in the galaxy far, far away,
like,
then
it's
whatever.
It's like if I was trying to be incognito. It's like, my actual name is Tony Barrero, but I'd be like, I'm going to change my name to Tone Barrero. No one will know the difference. I'll be able to hide out on this planet where the bad guy is actually from and never come back to look or check with his siblings, his stepbrother and stepsister or whatever.
They do say sometimes hiding in a fan site is the best way to hide.
I guess. I don't know. That seems like a really terrible idea, though. They really didn't think
that
one through.
Yeah. Yeah, he should have picked a better name.
For real. Okay, so back to the story. So we meet Luke. As we said, he's working on this moisture farm with his aunt and uncle. Then, you know, he finds out R2 has this hidden message from Princess Leia, asking for Obi-Wan Kenobi. He then is like, oh, maybe they meant Old Ben. So they take him over to Ben Kenobi's spot, who at this point is just an old dude living in the middle of nowhere by himself like a creeper. and at that point, he tells Luke about the Force and about, you know, Luke's father, kind of. You know, he tells him about some of just the bare essentials, like your father used to be a Jedi Knight, and he was a great pilot, and he's no longer around.
Yeah, so, he mentions that he was killed by Darth Vader.
Right, right. And then, of course, he gets the message from Princess Leia, who is telling him, what exactly was the message? I don't know.
General Kenobi, years ago, you served my father in the Clone Wars, and...
Holy crap, do you know the whole thing by heart?
I almost know the whole thing by heart.
the gist of it is he needs to get the Alderaan.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so he could help Bail Organa with the rebellion and all that.
Right.
What did she expect him to do, though?
To see the battle station plan safely to Alderaan,
and you also have to consider that Obi-Wan was a general, a very well-renowned general, and
30 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. But they don't got a lot of options at this point. Okay, it's slim pickings.
Like, this guy's a Jedi. Like,
yeah, he's one. He's probably to their knowledge, he's like the last Jedi left, and you know, was a great knight and a general and all this stuff, and a great leader and a great warrior. So they're like, look, man, you got to hook us up, help us out.
Yeah.
So,
maybe scraping the bottom of the barrel, but it's like the bottom of a nice barrel, so, yeah.
For sure.
He's still got something good.
So, okay, so then now Luke, Obi-Wan convinces Luke to join him. He's like, look, man, you know, do you want to come with? Otherwise, you're just going to be chilling on this crappy rock. So, you know, let's go learn about the Force.
Well, he says
and
no.
They go to... Yeah.
Well, yeah. First, he says no, and he goes back to his aunt and uncle's house, and they're just skeletons.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, they got fried. Because apparently the Empire came looking for the droids and found out who the droids were sold to, and then just went and murked, his aunt and uncle. So at that point, Luke's like, "Well, I got nothing else to do here," so he goes with him to Mos Eisley, right? Isn't that where they
are? Yep.
I'm so bad with names. You're like, I've only watched these movies like a million times. You'd think I would remember the names of these places. But so they go to Mos Eisley Spaceport, and they go to a bar there. And it's at this time, basically they're going to the bar to find someone to take them where they need to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously the Empire is after them, specifically after the droids. So they want to smuggle these droids Alderaan. Jesus.
Yeah. I was like, did you really forget Alderaan? You just said it two seconds ago.
It's not that. I have a terrible, terrible memory when it comes to names of places and people. Like, it's not good at all.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, I'm the kind of person who will meet someone and be like, oh, hey, how's it going? Hey, I'm Tony. Oh, cool. Yeah, I'm Mark. All right, cool. A couple seconds later, crap, what was that person's name?
Yeah.
Immediately forget. So they have to find a way to smuggle themselves over to Alderaan, and they run into Harrison Ford, Han Solo.
Han Solo.
They run into Harrison Ford playing Harrison Ford.
Yeah, basically.
They run into Indiana Jones.
And a walking carpet.
A walking carpet. They're at the spaceport, or I guess they're at a bar at the spaceport, and they do run into a little bit of trouble, with that one guy who's like, I've got that death sentence in seven whatever star systems.
And then Luke's like, I'll be
careful, you'll be dead.
It's like Luke just was there, and apparently that caused enough trouble for the locals.
He's got one of those faces that just looks like it needs to be punched. So, the guy was like... Yeah, so then Obi-Wan busts out the lightsaber and chops the dude's arm off, which is pretty badass. The first time you really see him use it in battle.
And the only real time that you see blood associated with the lightsaber.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Because in the other movies, if it cuts a limb clean off...
Which makes sense.
In episode 2, when Count Dooku goes to mildly stabs Obi-Wan with it, it kind of just opens up his skin and he bleeds as a result. That's the only other time blood's associated with a lightsaber, and yes, I do know that for a fact.
I at this point, I'm just going to go with whatever you say.
Yeah, I believe you. I don't. But, okay, so, yeah, they have a little scuffle there in the bar, and then they meet up with Han and Chewie and talk about, you know, hey, can you get us here? And this is where Han drops one of his famous lines of, you know, when he's talking about the Millennium Falcon, he's like, it's the ship that made the Kessel Run in under 12 parsecs.
No, everyone's like, what does that mean?
Yeah, well, not only that, but a parsec is a measurement of distance, not time. So to say it made a run in under 12 parsecs, it doesn't make any sense. That's like saying, you know, I ran this quarter mile in under an eighth of a mile. It's like, what? No, it doesn't. It's
like, how did you do that?
That doesn't make any sense. So
maybe it's so fast that it destroyed time and distance.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, apparently it was so fast in the run. This is what I read somewhere. Now, this is from a book that takes place after, so it's not really canon anymore. They try to defend it. Yep. They do. It has to do with they flew too close. Because apparently part of the Kessel Run goes around a very large gravitational field, probably like a black hole or something, and they went too close, but they were going so fast that they made it through, and they cut the amount of distance that they had to travel.
That is so stupid.
It's stupid, but you know, it's Star Wars, so
they could have thought of it. They could have thought of it. Here's an easier way. Instead of making the Kessel Run a distance, you make it a time thing. Be like, okay, look, this is an 8-hour run. Okay, cool, or whatever. And you'd be like, all right, cool. And, well, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a way to reverse it so that makes sense.
It's the amount of time, like you travel for a certain amount of time, and they traveled for 12 parsecs, which is a lot of time.
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But whatever. When they were writing the film, they were just trying to think of a cool term, and they're like, ooh, parsec. That's got to make sense, right? No, it doesn't. But
no one's going to dissect this enough to care, right?
Except for us.
Except for everybody for 40 years.
Yeah. If I ever meet George Lucas, I'm going to be like, so a parsec, huh?
he's probably just going to like raise his eyebrows.
he's probably going to wipe his brow with a hundred dollar bill and go on his day.
Yeah.
If anything, I think you should say holiday special first.
Oh God. Are we going to review that too?
I've seen that once. It's more than enough time for me. I think.
Yeah, no, we're all set on that. So, okay. So back to the story. So they meet up with Han.
I say we start speeding because it's gonna take forever if we're gonna recap the movie at this point.
Let's skip ahead to somewhere.
Skip ahead. All right, what's the next major thing when they're get captured?
Would be there.
Alderaan explodes.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
That was a dick move, but it had to be done because I sometimes think people have an issue with making bad guys bad guys. And having him do this, having her tell him something, and still doing it, just makes you want to see him get in the worst possible
way. Grand Moff Tarkin is, like, he's a truly a bad guy. There's no, like, redeeming qualities to him. None of that.
For those that don't know, Grand Moff Tarkin is the super old dude who's in charge. He's the guy who tells Vader, you know, to release the other guy.
Vader's leash, yeah.
Yeah. So that's Grand Moff Tarkin, who has, like, a pretty crazy backstory himself that you know, you can read about in the extended universe. But
it's not an account.
Yeah, I guess not, right? Well, no, didn't they come out with a new book about him?
Yeah, it's really weird. Certain stuff is now is still considered canon, and certain things, most of the stuff that's talked about before the original trilogy is considered canon. It's the stuff that's after it that falls under this legends category that I don't understand really.
Yeah, it's really stupid. Like, they got rid of the extended universe only to make a more convoluted extended universe.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It makes them more money. The one thing I will say about that though, after, you know, like, is he kind of gets off in such a nonchalant way.
Who does?
Doesn't he grow up with the Death Star?
Oh, Tarkin, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, they really don't, like, I mean, if you only watch this movie, you wouldn't really know much about him at all. Like, he seems just like a really, you know, kind of, not even a secondary character, he's just kind of like a background character that you're like, oh, okay, well, that guy's dead. But, yeah, he actually has a really crazy backstory about how he got to where he was.
But even then, I meant, like, in terms of this movie, because he's the one who's audited the destruction of the planet.
True.
And
yeah,
it's like,
but there is a very there is a scene before that when one technician approaches him and says, "Sir, we've analyzed their attack pattern, and there is actually a threat. So you want to like get out of here?" And Tarkin's like, psh, "Nah, man, that exhaust pipe's totally safe."
I get that, but I mean, like, I feel like that's like, there are times where like the hero needs to get that moment, and I feel like him thrown up and that wasn't a moment for anybody. It wasn't like satisfying for the audience to see him. Like somehow Leia should have been responsible for his destruction.
Mm. Yeah,
I know what you mean.
Right, but I feel like though in this film, like Darth Vader is really painted as the villain, even though Grand Moff Tarkin is kind of like pulling his leash. But I feel like they just didn't really pay much mind to him overall in the movie. So. It wasn't that big of a deal. Like, they really didn't need to dwell that much on his destruction.
Well, I guess the other thing would have been, because, spoiler alert, Darth Vader actually doesn't bite it in this movie, I think you needed something like that for the audience still goes home happy. Like, literally, the happiest you can get with an actual medal ceremony for the heroes at the end. But, I feel like, as far as the villains go, there's no proper conclusion for any of them in this film.
Yeah, it's kind of like They did what they set out to do, kind of, but yeah, they got the battle station plans back, and then they found a weakness, and then they exploited it.
Yeah, and well, I mean, Star Wars, every Star Wars movie does actually a really good job of keeping it open-ended. You know, like at the end of this movie, it's like, yeah, they blew up the Death Star, but I mean, they destroyed one base for, you know, the Empire. It's like they're still like, I mean, gosh,
yeah,
how many
well,
bases?
Darth Vader,
I mean, it's an entire
Darth
political system. Right. Yeah,
it's actually kind of, and I realize we do this in real life. It's kind of funny because they have like the big medal ceremony. It's like it makes it seem like the war is over. Like you blew up one ship.
Yeah,
there's
still
so much more to do, but they have like this huge ceremony, this whole pump and sink. And I, again, spoilers. It's weird that Han gets a medal, but it's Han and Luke and nobody else. There were other people on that run who were there from the get-go and didn't show up in the last second Han.
Wedge Antilles, who was part of Luke's attack run, but he was like, my engine got hit, so I gotta leave. And he's Luke's like, yeah, I guess. And he's like, sorry, I'm out of here.
He's like, thanks, bro.
At least he was there from the get-go. Only like Han, who shows up at 11:59, and like, oh, we're going to give him a medal.
And then, of course, Chewie doesn't get one, which is baloney.
And in reality, Han really only shot down one ship. The other guy just panicked and, like, hit Darth Vader's ship. You know, he only, like, fired, like, two turbo laser shells or whatever.
And somehow he ends up with a medal. Like, I thought that was poppycock. Like, I was rewatching it, and I know he comes back at the end.
Time out. Did you just say poppycock?
Yes. It was poppycock.
I'm sorry. I gotta bring that back. What?
Could I just get a quick definition of what poppycock means?
I am not sitting here to defend poppycock. I'm sure you both heard it before.
No, I heard it. I just want a definition, like a quick one.
I think we found a name for the series.
Poppycock Star Wars.
Welcome to Poppycock Episode 1. No, I'm just kidding.
Anyhow. But yes, I think we skipped over the entire story. Okay, so we mentioned the Jedi stuff before, and it's kind of interesting how the Jedi Order, or the Jedi... What do you consider the Jedi movement in this movie? I don't even know what to call it.
Jedi...
Believe?
It's kind of like medieval knights, right? Like when, you know, there's like a tie to religion, for sure, but they're like holy warriors, I guess, in a way.
Well, I meant like in this movie, because it's kind of presented as a belief, because like most people, like, really the only people who believe in it are Obi-Wan, Darth Vader,
and
Luke Skywalker. Yeah. So, because like he'll say it to the general, he's like, "Oh, your voodoo hasn't really shown us anything so far," or something like that. And it's like, yeah, Han doesn't believe in it. So yeah,
it's an ancient religion that has been almost completely wiped out, basically.
Okay, so you consider it origin?
Oh, for sure.
Make a belief. I was just curious because we know it's a thing, especially as the franchise goes on and you get into the, but here it's presented in such a way like I wasn't sure like is it like a like it shouldn't have been that long ago that people forgot, because in the context of the movie it's only been like 20 30 years.
Yeah, but even,
but I guess it's easy for religion to die.
Yeah, even it, that is a lot of time for a religion that's been effectively wiped out to just be completely forgotten. But even in like the prequels, The Jedi Order is still just like given like their space. No one actively tries to join the Jedi. The Jedi actually, and like I could go on and on about how Darth Vader was actually kind of right about the Jedi being evil, but I'll get into that outside of this podcast. Like the Jedi would kidnap children basically and then force them into their religion. So it's not like you joined it willingly.
So it was Scientology.
kind of, except there's no, like, you don't have to, like, keep paying every year to stay in it.
True.
You just have to pay with your life.
So let's see. I just looked up Jedi on Wikipedia, and it says here it is an ancient monastic, spiritual, and academic meritocratic organization. So whatever that means. Some kind of
that basically sums it up. Yeah, I'd say I understand it fully now.
I don't know what any of these words mean. Monastic and meritocratic. What does that even mean?
Monastic. Well, I know that like monotheism is worshiping.
Well, monastic. I'm looking it up. Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. It has to do with monks. And meritocracy is a political philosophy that power should be vested in individuals almost exclusively according to merit. So, okay. So it's like a religion like a monk type religion / political philosophy thing is what the Jedi Order is.
Yeah.
But their origins, it says here their origins date back to 25,000 BBY, which is before the Battle of Yavin. So,
oh, you know what that is, but
well, no, the Battle of Yavin, which is isn't that the destruction
of
the Death Star?
Yeah, the end of Episode 4. I don't know why they chose that as like the central point for timekeeping, but that's when they do it.
So the Jedi have been around for 25,000 years up to this point, basically, which is pretty insane. Because like, I mean, what other religion has been around for have humans been around for 25,000 years? I guess
maybe not quite as we are, but
yeah.
But I will say that I hadn't really noticed this until my friend brought it up, that the feel of being a Jedi and the Force and what that all means in Episode 4, 5, and 6 is so like vague. It's not explained. You're just supposed to like accept it on faith, and
well, that's what I was asking, because that is kind of what has to do in this film.
In those movies, you're just supposed to accept it as faith, like it exists. And but then in the prequels, they try to scientifically explain it all, and it kind of ruins the feel, you know?
Yeah, with the midichlorians and all that crap, you're like, oh, jeez, really?
Yeah, it's like if that had been introduced in the original trilogy and like that was the explanation, it's like, yeah, that's one thing, but it's just not as good as like, you know, like we believe in this all-powerful force and we really can't prove that it exists other than deflecting lasers and moving stuff with our minds.
Yeah, what does Obi-Wan say when he asks what the force, when Luke asks him what the force is, and he's like, it surrounds us, it penetrates us, it is in all living things, or something like that.
It binds us together.
Yeah. So,
and
yeah.
It's actually a virus.
Yeah, how funny would it have been? How funny would it have been if like Luke was like, "What is this force?" And he's like, "Well, you see, what we do is you have to measure your midichlorians, and then depending on how high of a level you have in your blood, you might be able to do cool stuff like move things with your mind." Like, what?
Yeah, but if it's kind of low, then you know you're not going to really do much. So,
it's kind of funny in a sense because I imagine as a screenwriter, it was probably like, I have no idea what this is, but if you don't ask anybody to figure it out, nobody cares. And then it's like, I have to explain it, and it's like, crap, this sounds stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah.
I think that's the best way to talk about, like, Jedi and the Force, is that Episode 1 kind of ruined it by trying to explain it scientifically.
That's the best way to talk about it, is to blame Episode 1.
Well, at the same time, but even, and we'll get to this, I guess, are we going to watch Episode 1? I don't...
Yes, it's part of the order.
Okay, so I guess we'll discuss it when we get to Episode 1, because there is still some mysticism involved in telling the story of Episode 1, but we'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah.
So, let's see, what else in this particular movie, though, in Episode 4?
I mean, I guess the big thing, or the other big set piece would be rescuing Leia from the... ship, and there's a ton of fun interaction. That's one thing I will say. The cast, who I think at the time were all mostly relatively newcomers, have a ton of chemistry together.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, some of them have a little too much chemistry, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
Luke getting all hot and bothered over Leia, which is a little weird.
Do you think they're going to bring that up in Episode 7 at all, or are they just going to ignore it?
They need to bury it. That was weird. Like, what do you think, what was the thought process in writing that into the movie?
I assume originally he didn't have them as brothers and sister.
Well, it was revealed in the next movie that they were brother and sister, so it's like he had to have known what he was going to write in that next, film.
I always felt it was like he had a love triangle and he didn't know how to resolve it, so he just did the next best thing, is to take an element out of the love triangle. Because it's revealed in the next movie, but they actually don't find out. Well, Luke finds out. Leia doesn't find out until Episode 5, 6, and Han doesn't find out until the end of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But George Lucas had to have known that Luke and Leia were going to be Anakin's children.
I feel like, because like at no point, and I could be wrong, it feels like at no point does he make a reference to like Leia being Darth Vader or Anakin's daughter or anything like that. Like with there's a ton of hints about Luke and his father, and there's nothing mentioned about.
You're right. Not until the next movie, in Episode 4, in Episode 5, they do for sure.
Well, even then, I thought he didn't realize Leia was his daughter until Episode 6.
No. Luke knows that Leia is his sister at the end of Episode 5.
Does he?
Yeah, because at the end of Episode 5 is when he gets when Leia has to save him, right? And then he can communicate with her telepathically at that point. Maybe he didn't know then.
Well, yeah, definitely some. Okay. Luke says, the famous scene, the famous scene when Yoda says, "No, there is another," is in Episode 6.
Okay.
And no, that's in Episode 5. Episode
right.
5, Yoda says there is another. And after in Episode 6, when Yoda dies, Luke talks to Obi-Wan's ghost, because, ghosts are a thing in this, and says, and finds out, officially, at that point, that Leia is his sister.
Right.
That's when the
However, as far as, like, when George Lucas knew, at the very latest, he knew when writing Episode 5. Because in Episode 5...
Which would be weird, because he has them kiss in Episode 5, doesn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. What? Sorry, I was about to curse. I don't know if this is a PG-13 podcast. But what the heck, George Lucas? What is wrong with you?
Maybe he's into that type of stuff.
Does he have any siblings? I don't know. I think he needs to have a discussion with his psychiatrist.
Yeah, just a little one. But I mean,
what in the world?
George Lucas and his like closest compatriots were very keen on keeping like every plot element a secret, even from the people in the movie.
Yeah.
The only people who knew that Darth Vader was Luke's father were George Lucas and like the executive producer, Mark Hamill, and James Earl Jones. Even the guy playing Darth Vader's physical body didn't know until the movie came out.
Right.
Like, that's how secret it was. So it wouldn't be surprised if just George Lucas just kept it a secret the whole time, and it was, you know, some weird fantasy of his. I don't know.
I was wondering where you're going with that as far as them kissing.
That it ends with weird fantasy. I realized that it got, like, pretty weird at the end there.
Yeah.
Because, again, like, even if you don't know hair, like, it's whatever, but they do kiss. Even if it's to make Han jealous, they do kiss in the next movie at the start of it. So if he knew then, that's still weird to put in.
Yeah, very weird.
I don't know. Anyways, so.
But even in episode 4, just to bring it back to the movie that we're on, like I said, I sometimes jump around, but there's chemistry between Leia and Luke. There's chemistry between Han and Leia also. It's a little more, like, combative, but it's still there. And then there's this weird sort of, like, it's like almost a mentor thing between Han and Luke, but also, like, a friend thing. Like, almost like an older brother that you would look up to, but you're also usually disappointed in.
Yeah,
you're disappointed. Nice.
I kind of get that, and that is kind of their relationship, and it's not, because it evolves by the end of the final Return of the Jedi. It's really hard to refer to these films because you can't say the ass one. It is the ass one, but technically, Revenge of the Sith is the most recent one. Anything else that stands out? Because if we're hitting an hour, we already. Is there anything else you folks want to talk about?
You know what? I want to know, why do you not like this movie? This particular one, episode 4?
I don't have any problem with episode 4.
Oh, okay. Okay. I guess we'll get to that then in one of the future ones.
If I know what I'm going to have problems with, even though I think some people can kind of see it, I'm not a huge fan of Return of the Jedi.
And I will defend you on that, actually, because there's a lot of like just random Deus Ex Machina going on in Return of the Jedi. So
It drives people even more nuts when I tell them I Revenge of the Sith more. But
no, I actually agree with you.
Whoa. You like Revenge of the Sith more?
Yes.
I agree with you, Earl. I like Revenge of the Sith
more
than Return of the Jedi.
No!
we're
going to get to this.
We'll duke it out in a later episode, but I will defend Earl on this. I like Revenge of the Sith more than Return of the Jedi. But I definitely like A New Hope, and especially Empire Strikes Back, more than any of the others, by a long shot.
You know what I have to say about you liking Revenge of the Sith more?
No.
Okay.
You know they added that into Return of the Jedi?
Really? When did they add that?
They added that in. Yeah.
Where?
At the end, when Darth Vader goes to throw the Emperor off.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
They added that.
My God,
so now which one's the worst movie?
God damn it.
Like,
all right,
now
we'll
they're on the
that.
Same playing field with that. So maybe
okay, so
it is better.
All right, so we'll get to those movies in their due time. But back to episode 4. So we all like episode 4.
Well, I was about to say, since you mentioned it, not necessarily disliking the movie, but is there anything you dislike about this movie?
Right.
I will just say this. I don't think the ending doesn't play for me. I don't like that ending.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I understand it, and it happens in real life. It's so weird, though, because, like, the battles, like, the war's not over, and it's, like, this huge, not a celebration, but it feels like they're, like, oh, we've won the day, and it's, like, this is, like, you taking somebody's pawn off the board, and there's still a bunch of, like, rooks and knights around there.
Yeah. Well, I think
it's, well,
like,
no, it's not a pawn, for sure.
Taking the, like,
it's not a pawn, but you know what I mean.
But that's like the only piece you took. Like, there's still everything left. And then they also have another board's worth of pieces.
Right. Well, this was a game-ending piece. Like, the Death Star was, you know, it had destroyed a planet, and it was about to destroy the main base completely, or the entire planet that the base was on. So,
yeah, but
to destroy
then,
that is
a... knew about that, because it just kind of came into function.
Yeah, I will admit that a lot of other movies have basically like a debrief after the main conflict, and A New Hope doesn't really have that. They have a quick like, hey, we just got back from destroying the Death Star, we're happy, and then it goes right to the, hey, we destroyed the Death Star, we're going to celebrate with an award ceremony. There's no real like debriefing. Like,
which is very jarring, just to jump ahead, because the next one pretty much, again, starts in the middle of a battle. So it's like you kind of celebrate, and it's like, nope, this war's still going on, and there's still a small rebel force that has to hide out. So it's weird that they're doing like the ceremony in open.
Yeah,
I will admit that it ends a little weird. Like, the only thing that I can draw like a similarity to for how I would want it to be is like at the end of some of the Marvel movies when they do that whole like. Like, at the end of Avengers 2, when they're just, like, you know, walking down the hallway, just having, like, a general, like, chat. It's like, yeah, we did good this time, didn't we? It's like, yeah, but let's insert some possible scenarios for the next movie, all that. They just don't do any of that. They, in A New Hope, they just, conflict's over, movie's over.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so. I mean, you also have to consider a couple of things. Like, when, you know, you have to consider when the movie came out, which was in the 70s. I mean, the storytelling was different back then. Like, this is really the first movie of its kind that we had ever seen up to that point. Also, you have to consider there was no promise of a sequel when this movie came out. I mean, this was a young man going to a big studio, trying to get a few bucks to make a movie, and then, you know, hoping that it does well enough that he can make a sequel. If that. So, I mean, there was no promise of a sequel when this movie came out, so they had to conclude it in the best way they could.
Yeah, they had to put a bow on it and all that.
And I get that. I just felt like this wasn't the bow the movie needed.
Mm.
It could have had something different, you know, like the Rebel Alliance has made, like, they made headway, definitely, but
right.
They should have said, like, we made headway, but this isn't the end, like, we didn't kill the Emperor. We killed his, like, second or third in command or something.
Sure, and I think it's implied that there is a continuation when, I mean, Darth Vader is sent spinning off into space, and it's like, that scene in itself is almost like a, it's like a Team Rocket's blasting off again thing, like, oh, see, we'll get you next time, Gadget, you know, so it's the continuation is implied, I feel like, in that scene. But, okay, so... I kind of want to know how you guys would score this, unless you have more things you want to say about what you didn't like about it first.
Nothing really comes to mind about what I would say I dislike about it.
It's a well-crafted movie, and like, any of the mistakes you have, I mean, any of the problems you have can kind of be glossed over because it's entertaining throughout.
Right.
I
wonder how long was the movie, because it felt like it went by at a good speed. Like, I wasn't, you know, there are like a lot of movies nowadays, there will be a period somewhere in the middle where you're like, okay, is it over yet? But this one was, I mean, it felt like it was clipping along.
That's actually something I was going to point
out. 2 hours, 16 minutes.
That's one of the good things about this film is that because you start in action and the film always has a forward momentum. Like, it's always like they need to, like, something's happening and they need to get to the next point and then the next point and the next point. It's never like, okay, calm down. Like, even the thing when they're going over the plans for the battle star, the Death Star. You had the Death Star moving towards the planet to blow it up.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, and that was the other thing I really liked about the climax, is that it has a ticking time, a timer, but it doesn't have an actual timer, where a lot of movies are really just like, okay, the audience needs to know that there's a timer on it. It's like the people telling them, like, we're getting within distance of the planet or whatever. And it's not like an actual countdown timer or something, which a lot of movies do nowadays because we can't tell time. So here's a bomb and it has like 2 minutes. How can the heroes stop it in 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Sure. And then they always stop it at the very, like, the last second, which annoys me every single time.
Yeah, that always bothers me too when there's like 1 second left.
Right.
But. I would say that the only problems that I would try to say that I have with the movie is some of the remastering stuff is unnecessary. Now, some of it helps. Some of it either improves or just maintains the status quo, but some of it is just kind of annoying. Like some of the scenes, like when they get into Mos Eisley spaceport, with like the general commotion, they try to throw like some weird humor into it, and it just doesn't. It takes away from that scene really, because that's not the impression of Mos Eisley that they give immediately following that in the cantina, which is weird but also incredibly hostile. Like you don't feel that when you're driving. It's The remastering needs some remastering. That's what I'll say.
Right.
And this is something that will probably come up often enough. I'm not a huge fan of C-3PO.
I think that's the point with him, is that you're supposed to not really like him. He's annoying.
He's also supposed to be the comic relief, and that doesn't work often for me.
He's Courage the Cowardly Dog. That's what he is. He's the little cowardly kind of chicken guy who's always, you know, afraid and running away, and you just kind of, you're like, oh, C-3PO, here we go again. But I think R2-D2, like, saves the day, for sure. Like, he's so likable that I feel like C-3PO doesn't even matter.
Yeah, I think C-3PO is more there to sort of contrast R2-D2.
Sure. How funny is it, too, that, like, R2-D2 is such a lovable character, and yet he doesn't really ever say anything at all?
Well, it's the same thing with Chewbacca. It's actually kind of weird to have two dominant characters in a franchise who don't actually speak English words.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, R2 is probably my favorite character from the entire series. Like, he's just, I don't know, he's like a badass little robot. Like, he's always saving the day. And, you know, kind of has his own thing. He's the only one that knows everything that's going on.
Okay. So I'm kind of curious now, since I mentioned that. Like, what do you think of the fact that they don't subtitle R2 or Chewie, but they subtitle people like Jabba?
I think that when R2-D2 and Chewbacca are speaking in those roles, that there isn't as much exposition that's explained, and you can sort of understand what they're saying based on, like, C-3PO's or Han Solo's reactions to what they're saying.
Yeah, it's implied.
Yeah, but with Jabba the Hutt and Greedo, when they're talking to Han at those points, there's a lot of exposition, and, like, if I try to watch that without, or if I sat someone who hadn't seen Star Wars, and I hope that it's not too easy to find someone who hasn't seen Star Wars, but if I sat someone in front of that and told them to try to guess what Jabba's saying, they might have a general idea, but that whole scene would just kind of suck if you have no idea what Jabba's actually saying.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think it has to do with, like, the amount of exposition, because very rarely do R2-D2 and Chewbacca actually have anything to really add to a conversation.
You don't know that. They could be saying a lot that we just have been missing out on all these years.
What if it's all just like the most foul things you could possibly think of? And you're like, Jesus, R2, like, take it easy.
You get your mother with that mouth.
Maybe that's why C-3PO is always like, oh, whoa. Like, R2-D2 is just like throwing the foulest curse words at him.
But maybe he does kiss his mother with that mouth, because he's seen what his father does in his free time.
Yeah.
I wonder if R2-D2 had like a human voice, what would he sound like?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I don't know. I want to say he would sound like 50 Cent. That would be hilarious.
I kind of want to watch a version of A New Hope with just 50 Cent voice acting R2-D2.
Dubbing R2.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
And everything else is the same.
So, okay, so we've been going on here for over an hour now. I want to know what you guys would score this movie.
Out of five.
Out of five?
Yeah. And you can do half points, too, I guess.
I would... I will defend my 4.5 by saying I'm basing it off of how much I love Empire Strikes Back. Because I can't give a movie that I like less than Empire Strikes Back a perfect score in this case. Is that weird? Yeah. Do you understand?
No, that makes sense. No, like using a scale, everything has to be below that, because if that's the peak, you compare everything to.
Yeah, if I'm gonna look at like basically sort of like the genre and sci-fi and then movies in general, yeah, I give it a 4.5, but it's definitely my second favorite too. So I will say that also.
Okay. Earl,
I'd say a 4. Like, I enjoy it. For me, it doesn't do anything super special where I love it. But I like it well enough, and it's entertaining. I can watch it every few years and not get bored.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. See, I this is a tough one for me. Because every time I rewatch Episode 4, or any of the movies for that matter, but specifically Episode 4, I'm reminded how, and this is hard to say, but Episode 4 is my favorite Star Wars movie. I think I like Episode 4 better than 5.
And I respect that opinion.
Because I feel like Episode 4 is a complete film that you can go into without knowing anything at all about Star Wars. You can watch it. It has a conclusion. It's you know, Episode 5, and we'll get to Episode 5, I guess, next time, but it's a fantastic movie, but there are prerequisites to Episode 5. Like, you can't just go into Episode 5 not knowing anything, because then you'd be like, what? Yeah. I don't know what's going on. Episode 4 is a full, complete movie. It concludes in a very nice way. You're introduced to all the characters, and as we said earlier, the characters have a great chemistry. There are awesome action sequences, and it opens up this whole universe of just possibility and you know, imagination. And yeah, the more I think about it, the more I'm convinced it is my favorite Star Wars movie. So I'm going to have to give Episode 4, A New Hope, 5 out of 5.
Can I just explain?
I can't think of anything bad about it. Like, there's nothing that about this movie that I don't like.
I would just like to explain really quickly, because I can explain it really quickly, why Empire Strikes Back, I like it more than A New Hope. Because the Empire wins. That's it.
Yeah, everyone says that. Everyone, because the bad guy wins. Yeah, that's cool, I guess. But it's not a complete movie. It's a second act of a movie.
I know, but you don't understand how I actually...
On that note, we're going to end this here so we can pick up this conversation next week.
Poppycock.
Poppycock. It's,
you say one word. We'll pick it up next week when The Empire Strikes Back.